Maybe I could just use this time to just kind of give the board members an update on Mr. Dilda McFadden.
Okay.
At this point, Mr. Dilda McFadden is going to have to take a hiatus from the board participation and has respectfully asked that he be able to step down due to a family matter that is calling his attention at this point. I know we don't formally have it on the agenda, so I did it as a public comment. But going forward, maybe next meeting, I know we're scheduled to meet again on the 29th. We could take official board action on Mr. McFadden's resignation. I'll be sure I can put it on the agenda at that point.
Is he resigning or is he just on a hiatus?
He is requesting to step down at this time. And it appears that it's going to be an extended requirement for his engagement to be focused on family. Right. So at this time, that's what he's requesting.
Hi, Miss Denise.
You can hear me now, I'm sure.
Yes.
What did you say?
Baby.
And the dogs in the background?
Yes.
Hey. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay, so we can call the meeting to order then. And the first or second item on the agenda is the approval of the September board agenda.
So moved.
I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Denise?
We need a roll call?
Yes.
Aye.
Denise?
Yes.
Carla? We kind of did it. And then Christy?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes.
Okay. We'll move on to public comment. I understand there is no one from San Bernardino. How about El Centro?
No one from El Centro right now.
Is this link sent out to parents in the community? Do they have the opportunity to join?
They have the opportunity to join. We always post the agenda in front of the building with the contact of Dora Singh.
I see. Okay.
And in addition, the agenda is supposed to be posted on our school website.
Right.
So it's available there as well.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I recall in person, there really isn't anybody either. So, but I just wanted to make sure. Okay.
It tends to be based on the topics of the meeting. Honestly, that is when we'll get some public comments.
Makes sense.
I will tell you, when we were hearing or evaluating 7th and 8th grade, we got a standing room only.
Wow.
Opportunity, yes, in El Centro.
Wow.
For several meetings.
Several meetings, yes.
Okay, so we'll move on to item four, consent agenda action items. And the first one is attachment A, approval of the August board minutes, August 18th, 2020, and then the special meeting, August 28th, 2020. I'll move to approve those.
Second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, roll call.
Christy?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carries.
Okay. And B, the second one is approval of July 2020 financials for El Centro and San Bernardino. I'll move to approve.
Board members, I just sent those out. So I wanted to maybe make sure that all of you had an opportunity to open them. And then I can also walk through them just because they do look a little bit different than historical presentation.
Why don't you share it, Doreen, and just walk it through it, because it is a little different, and that way we can, at least everyone can be on the same page.
Sure. And I will give the caveat of board members, I want to say thank you for your patience. I know that we have been navigating with a back office company, so we actually are working on developing our own process of putting together financials that will best represent you as board of directors, the ability to you know, determine whether and how the school is doing financially at any given point in time. Just a brief note, I know there's three different reports that you receive throughout the year as it relates to financials, our first, our second, and then our unaudited. I know we have spoken previously that schools actually operate and present all of their reports to the authorizer as well as to CDE in somewhat of a modified accrual basis, where cash is represented as that of which is received versus the full accrual basis of, you know, our revenue earned and then our expenses as well. So we're working through that process of being able to present to you a cash basis report as well as an accrual basis report to give you the best tools to evaluate where the school is. So I'm just gonna cancel, if you'll just bear with me. I'm kind of trying to take over Joseph's screen right now. And it's...
Joseph, I think you're going to have to stop sharing the agenda.
Can I say continue?
I think you have to click on top of it, on the financials. You see on top, it says the PDF. Yes.
Oh, is it there already? Is it?
Yes.
We got it, Doreen.
Oh, he does? Okay, I can get out of this then?
Yes.
Cool. Okay, awesome. Okay, so right now we're looking at Ballington El Centro. In the first report, you'll see it provides you with the revenue we received. School revenue, the California Department of Education has their own financial, I want to say, funding allocation schedule. And historically, in normal times, we're not in normal times anymore, we're in a year of deferrals. In normal times, each month, the first couple months, you receive a certain percentage of your projected annual revenue. And then as you go, the idea is as you go throughout the year and your expenses grow, they'll give you more and more revenue. That's under a very normal year. So this graph shows you for El Centro our revenue received to date, as well as our expenses to date. These are actual expenses compared to our budget. The next page will demonstrate to you just a really basic income statement. It shows you where we're at in revenue as projected as to what we would have accrued or earned in July. It also shows you in a comparison to our July budget. And then it also gives you a year to date analysis. Again, we are in a very different type of year, board members. As we have spoke, the California Department of Education is calling us this a hold harmless year. So unlike any other year, they are basing our revenues and our funding on prior year's attendance, our prior year's ADA. So that is will be following us throughout this entire year. So that allows us to basically look at our overall annual revenue and project very easily how much we should be accruing each month. And it should be, unless there's any drastic changes. And when I say drastic, I mean if some of our funding sources, such as our facilities funding revenue. We have talked about that before, where that's the one piece of revenue where there's a limited number of pot of funding, and then based on the number of schools that apply, that could be adjusted. Albeit situations like that, for the most part, our revenue should stay the same, because unlike other years, we're not going to experience large increases or decreases in attendance, which really drives the majority of our revenue. So this is basically where El Centro stands. As you can see, we're projecting our revenue to be in accordance with what we budgeted. Our expenses came in a little bit less this last year for the first month of July. I will share that both principals in El Centro as well as San Bernardino, we're making a very concerted effort to manage expenses. We know that since our revenue is going to stay pretty much the same, unless again there's a drastic external thing that happens, really we should be able to manage our budget very closely this year. This presents for July's actuals. We came in positive $60,000 in a comparison to what we were supposed to be positive to about $17,000. And that's for El Centro. If we transition to San Bernardino, and I know that you will also see, did I attach the wrong one?
I think there's something, you know, the chart shows the 109,000, and if you go to the next page, it shows 335,000. I think there's a little mix up with the charts.
I think for El Centro, what happened, our charter vision did not update the budget to the latest budget. This budget, the chart budget, represents the budget that was approved by the board members in May. And then we brought back another one in August where we had additional funding. The income statement represents that updated budget.
I think what Carla is speaking, I think, and if Carla, if I get this wrong, please correct me. I think the charts on page one represent the reporting format and formula that school districts in the state of California require, which, as Doreen was saying, we call it a quasi-accrual, only because the revenue portion is reported in cash, and that's based on their allocation, and the expense portion is actually based on accrual. And so that's why the second statement that Doreen presented on page two, if you will, go to page two.
Yeah, because I can see the expenses is the same on page one and page two,
right?
74,000.
Right, because they are the same. The only difference is to help the board members get an idea of exactly what you approved in terms of your budget and how we're doing in relationship to cash, which we actually will receive over the course of the year. But we want to show it so that it depicts really how the performance of the program is versus just showing the cash side of it, because it gives an unbalanced view.
All right, I have a question though, because if we go back to that next page, it's the exact same figure, the expense to date is the exact same figure of Ballington El Centro. And that would be a marvelous coincidence, but I think that's yeah. Interesting because it says the actual is 274,768 and the budget is 294,943, which leads to like 20,175. These are the exact same numbers in the previous expense to date for Ballington El Centro. So for me, I look at that as very odd.
No, guys, I need to send San Bernardino. I think I attached El Centro twice. So yeah. I'm sending San Bernardino now to Joseph to pull up.
Okay. Also, Doreen, I've been reading things that, you know, in a hell of a lot of damn things I've been reading, that if it seems as though they're leading towards, if you have a higher ADA, that you can claim the higher ADA to get more money. I mean, that's and maybe, you know, what I understand from what I'm reading. Is that something that you've been able to see? Because we're up about three kids from our ADA.
I have read that. And in the law that was just recently approved, SB 820, where they outline that,
right,
it is based on you would have needed to have that ADA approved in your by the board by the June 30th budget. And then in addition to that, they're going to apply the state, what they're calling the state's attendance factor. So,
right.
So
would we be able to, if we end the year, like with five students above what we were, claim those five students ADA into our budget?
You would need to look and see what we approved, the board approved, as our ADA by June 30th. I think when I looked, there was a differential of about two students. So those two students, they would take into account, they would apply that attendance factor to that. And whichever one is greater, that would be the one that you would be paid at. So they would adjust it based on the statewide attendance rate. So if the statewide attendance rate is only 92%, that could mean that you would get actually less money. So it would not work in our favor.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Thank you, Doreen. I appreciate your clarity.
You're welcome. No, I got excited too until I
was excited. I read that and I'm like, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Yeah.
That's maybe 20,000. Yeah.
I did get excited too until I read the fine print.
Okay.
So again, I apologize. I had in my haste attached both El Centro's to your email. This is San Bernardino's financials. As you can see, this is all based on cash. San Bernardino received very little revenue based on cash this for the month of July, as well as then you can see their actual expenses to budgets. Their actual expenses for July came in less than their budgeted expenses.
Good.
If we transition to the income statement, oops. One more, I think. To the income statement, then you will see a July actual to budget, as well as a July actual to budget for year to date. Again, we're under the belief that because the state had given us a hold harmless situation, our revenue should stay pretty much the same each month. Given that, we anticipated earning our full revenue as we budgeted for the month of July. Then if we go ahead and we look at expenses, overall, we budgeted $206,000 for the month of July. We came in at $154,000 for expenses to be a net of $64,000, slightly above our budgeted positive of $12,000.
Woo-hoo.
Any questions on that?
Yeah, I still don't understand the chart and the numbers together.
So the chart represents basically cash and actuals, and then the income statement below represents accrual.
Okay. Accrual. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Schools, they deal with cash as revenue. Unfortunately, when you look at just cash, it makes us look like we are not in a good state, you know? That's why we tried to take it into an accrual basis to truly demonstrate how we're comparing to our budget.
Okay. Right.
Because honestly, when I first saw the cash, I was ready to call both principals up and say, what happened? We are not spending. We have to be positive. As you can see in the accrual, it gives a better financial position.
So is the Charter Vision a new accounting program you guys are using?
No, Charter Vision is our back office's system. That is their accounting system that they use. They use a accounting system, and then their accounting system pushes it into Charter Vision. Charter Vision, historically, we've had access to, but again, sometimes it's not always up to date. So that is why we generate our own statements.
Okay.
And it does not do accrual. It only operates in cash receipt because that is how schools historically are run.
So the Charter Vision is, can somebody download those numbers that who needs it?
They can download it only in cash. They can't download it in accrual. Okay. Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Because their system won't do accrual.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. And then if we go down one more, the last piece is what I had provided to you in both documents is just a simple balance sheet, and that is based on cash.
And I think Doreen's point about we would have to remake the entire financial report to put it into a format that really allows the board and management to see how they're really doing. And that's not something that we want to do. So we're just trying to work the profit and loss side of it and continue to, until we can get back office to realign their process. We want to just make sure you get good information about the budget that you approve and how are we doing in relationship to the budget that you approve, particularly since revenue is a predictable issue in that regard.
Doreen, I don't think the balance sheet is on cash basis, not pure cash basis, because there's accounts receivable and accounts payable on there.
On mute. This was again generated right out of Charter Vision.
Okay.
And it aligns to their books.
Well, it could be it's modified or something. Okay, I'm good.
Okay.
So I guess you want a motion to approve?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve the July 2020 financials for both El Centro and San Bernardino as presented.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay, roll call.
Denise?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, let's move on to item five, other agenda action items. We have three items. The first one is approval of suicide prevention policy, and that is attachment C.
Mm-hmm. So board members, recent legislation required a suicide policy if you served 7th to 12th grader. So Ballington was never expected to have a formalized suicide policy. Most recently, legal legislation has changed, and now they are requiring a suicide policy for all of their schools, no matter what grade you serve. So with that said, I am presenting to you a proposed policy for suicide. It is legally compliant. It was vetted and written primarily by our attorneys to be in compliance with the California Department of Education's requirements. Some key elements of the policy itself, it identifies we have to appoint a person at our school that will be the bridge to make sure that we're compliant and to receive to respond to anything related. We're a small school. Many schools, much larger, have guidance counselors, psychologists that sometimes can take this role. As small schools with limited staffing, at this point, it will fall to our principal and with some additional clerical support. The policy also outlines the requirements to train our staff. It provides procedures and steps for our response. It provides notifications. And then it also lists interventions and methods. And again, this meets the legal compliance of a policy related to this.
Is there a mental health professional that the school or that Ballington regularly deals with for guidance on things like this?
Yes, each school has identified a community agency that they reach out to and that provides this type of support for them.
Did we reach out to them just for this, or is it an existing relationship?
It's an existing relationship for mental health support for both students.
Okay. And presumably they would be the ones providing the training?
Yes.
Not necessarily, right? I mean, I'm in the process of looking for that, Doreen, because I know the policy speaks to an annual, you know, presentation or professional development on that. So that's something we have to get on. But, you know, I'll be reaching out to behavioral health to see if they have that this week.
And that's really the person that you have used for your resources in prior situations where students, not necessarily suicide, but definitely had mental health.
Mental health, yeah.
Kind of a broader question. I understand that it's, you know, the need for it in schools with older children, teenagers. Is this an issue, a big issue, or does it show up much in elementary school?
It shows up. You know, I mean, we go K through or TK through 6, and I'm working with a parent. In fact, I have a meeting tomorrow with a sixth grade parent and our RSP teacher and that teacher to discuss what we are perceiving as some severe depression. He was also noted as going on sites via the Chromebooks Go Guardian, where he is visiting sites or trying to access sites that have information about suicide.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, and this has not been our first instance with that. Usually we see a lot of this happening in the sixth grade, sometimes in the fifth grade. And we've actually had some third grade students in the past as well that we've needed to intervene with to get some, you know, emotional and psychological support for.
Right.
And I would echo what he's saying is that it's not an everyday occurrence.
No.
But it has happened. And I think that we're small enough that we know our students, we see changes in behavior, and we can put those supports in place right away for them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And being really connected to Volunteers of America, I know historically we had a school counselor that would come down and work with some of the students that expressed, I know at one point, and I don't know, Bill, if this was when you were at, it might have been under your hiatus, one brief year, you know, where they were talking about harming themselves. We did have one of our school counselors that was with Volunteers of America come in and do some groups and intervention. Another situation where we had another student, actually, when we had our LCFW from our Early Head Start program in San Bernardino come down to El Centro and work with families. So really being able to tap into those resources has been critical.
And I also have two kind of commingling questions in my head right now. And one is, I mean, it sounds like, so since this does happen occasionally, and you do have children that need help, how specifically is this policy gonna change that? And then the kind of commingling question I have with it is the policy focuses a lot on training, and is there a cost to this training that is outside of what you're doing now? So if you have a process now, is there a cost to that? And does this policy imply or explicitly state that additional cost will be incurred?
Well, I'll let you know when I'm done with this week. because I'm looking into it. You know, I mean, I'm, you know, a lot of these things, you know, we just finished our mandated reported training online, and that was something that was at no cost at all. So there are often places where you can get specific training for no cost, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's, and I'm kind of in the same boat. The organization that we work with can only service children who are already on public assistance. But because of that, they can do groups if only one student qualifies. They can do a whole group. So they're doing like group counseling, things like that. But in terms of training, I know that they can work, they can do parent training and things like that. So with this change in the law and the expectations, I don't know if they're going to be changing their scope. So just like Bill, I need to do my homework and see what's available, and then we'll know if there is a cost to it.
Right.
But we will do our absolute best to find it for free.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
And also being, you know, connected to Volunteers of America, again, that has a behavioral health division. I definitely believe that we can leverage some of those resources as well. And I'm certain also that the California Department of Education, much like a lot of their other policies and procedures, also has resources that we can access also.
Right, and I think it's important too, like, you know, the idea of having a point person, the idea of having training, you know, I think sometimes when we are in the elementary school world, that sometimes goes off of our radar and we might miss certain things, you know. I mean, we've dealt with kids who are like in second grade with severe depression, you know, because of, you know, a divorce situation or something that's taking place in the house. You know, but to be able to recognize that A, it's a possibility, and B, what are the signs that we need to look at, you know, right. Whether it's failing grades or asocial behavior or whatever.
And I know that there is definitely a larger recognition or acknowledgement in the schools to really look at mental health services.
Mm-hmm.
I know, Bill, when we were budget planning one of your years, and I don't think we were able to do it much because of the enrollment shift last year, we really wanted to identify a counselor or some sort of psychologist type to come in and provide some additional support. I think we even built it into the ICOE MOU to allow for additional psychology services.
Right, just for like a lunch bunch thing or meeting with people. Yeah. And one of the things that come across a lot, you know, and sad to say, is what I'm seeing a lot now are children who cut themselves.
That's it.
Children are cutting. You know, and that's something that on another case this week, I'm dealing with a child who is dealing with that right now and sending pictures to her friends of her cutting herself. You know, so that got back to me yesterday. So I've been dealing with that this week, you know.
Well, I guess if ever there was a time for mental health support, it's now.
Now is the time, yeah. And we're seeing that.
Absolutely. Although those are all the questions that I had. Are there any other questions on this item from anyone else? Any other discussion?
No.
Just that it's a sad thing. that the stresses of the world are being felt by these children so much more. And I remember being their age, you know, the only thing I cared about was baseball, stickball, stoop ball, football, you know, and basketball. That was it, you know, and it seemed like it was a simpler time.
You know, I think, Bill, you're hitting something on the head, and I think something that we need to be really mindful of, and Christy, I think you're really working through this issue in an appropriate fashion. I think the unintended consequences of what children have been going through for really this year is going to continue to permeate in children. What the stresses are that we see in homes and families, and you know, kind of the interactions and engagement with children are going to, I think, exacerbate the need for us being mindful that children are going to need our support in this particular area. I'm not sure, Bill, whether or not behavioral health, you know, has a, I am sure they do have a children's, you know, have folks that focus on working with specifically with children. I'm not sure, Shannon, about San Bernardino, but I think, you know, really looking at cultivating a relationship and maybe even in an advisory capacity, having those individuals be a part of discussions, maybe at some of the staff meetings that you have, to just look at some of the signs, you know, to be mindful of. I think those are helpful things that we can maybe use. We can't probably get them to come out on a regular basis, probably on an as-needed basis, but we can get them to do some training, awareness training with our staff. And I think that would be helpful for us and helpful for the staff. Because these little children really don't have the ability to navigate their way out of the box that they wind up getting in. So it really is going to be to a degree up to us to try to do everything we can for early identification.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't seem there are any more questions, so I move to approve the suicide prevention policy as presented.
Yes.
I'll second that.
All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Roll call.
Doreen, you're on mute. You're on mute.
Carla? Sorry. Denise?
Yes.
And Christy?
Yes.
And Harry's.
Okay, the next item under item 5 is item B, approval of updated uniform complaint procedure. Attachment D.
Board members, I think that every single year I bring this to you for an approval of a revision. So every single year I feel like they make minor changes and we have to legally add different words. So this is again updated in accordance with the law. I will tell you a lot of the changes are wordsmithing. They wanted us instead of just to have a complaint process just against anything. They're asking us to call it out. So we called out additional areas that people can have concerns around, such as our school safety plan, the LCAP process, any of our nutrition programs. They also added that we needed it to be posted on our website. We also, prior to this, had a two-prong approach where we could reach out to the Director of Human Resources or the superintendent. We modified that and just had it go now just to one source, the superintendent, and then superintendent will work with the parties to resolve. They also added some additions to the number of days. They added, you know, within 60 days, within the 5 days, they clarified the amount of time that we have in order to respond. They also added a longer appeals process. They spelled out how it needs to go to CDE, and then the state superintendent will have an opportunity, and then how the school will need to respond to that. Lastly, as part of the policy is our form. So we just, they asked us again to make some modifications to what we actually called out on that form as far as the different programs, and then also adding immigration status. So again, I believe at this point, you know, pretty minor tweaks. Again, a lot of, as the law changes, they add sort of different language that then we need to update the policy to be compliant with the law.
So this form is filled out by us, by the school, or is it intended that someone downloads it from the website now and they fill it out and hand it into the school?
It is intended for those individuals that have a complaint to complete actually the form. That was another thing they added. They're requesting that all complaints come in writing based on your policy and then submitted to the school.
Yeah, it's amazing with policies and procedure. They're not getting shorter. They're getting longer and longer and longer every year.
Truer words never spoken.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
Worse this year.
Yeah, much worse this year.
It's really just like when we, the audit procedures, it's like every year it's expanding of stuff that needs to be done and looked at. It's crazy sometimes.
Yep. It is crazy.
It's for the safety of our kids, and totally understandable.
Doreen, I just might suggest that, you know, we reach out to Puzzle Pieces if once the board approves it, so that since they're supporting our website, that we get this to them so they can make sure that it's posted on our website for both of the schools.
Any other questions or discussion about this item? Okay, I'll move to approve the updated uniform complaint procedure.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, roll call.
Christy?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, the next item, item C under 5C, approval of Ballington San Bernardino Special Education MOU. This is attachment E.
Board members, this is just really the final administrative action as it relates to Ballington Academy San Bernardino's charter approval process renewal. They require us to do a separate MOU outlining our relationship with them as it relates to special education. There is no changes in this MOU to the one that you approved, like 2 or 3 years ago under the prior renewal. It is the same type of relationship. Special education is provided by San Bernardino City Unified School District. In accordance with that, then Ballington Academy, they maintain all the special education funding, and Ballington Academy essentially causes them a fee, which is called encroachment, which we experienced at the end of last fiscal year for their services. In the MOU, it denotes that we're put on basically a payment plan, so to speak, for those encroachment services from year 18 to 19 and 19 to 20. It lists about $245,000. In that MOU, I'm happy fortunately, with the ending of last year, we actually paid the majority of all of that encroachment back to San Bernardino at this point. So other than that, it just really details our process of special education services with our authorizer.
Can you clarify during the encroachment, is that what we go over in what we had planned? And so that's when they put us on a payment plan? Or is that standard at the end of every year?
It is standard for the most part. At the beginning of the year, they project based on prior year, so to speak, how a special education budget. And historically, schools have always overspended. They tend to spend more money than what special education funding provides. So in a sense, it moves into the operating budget. So there's a pool of those dollars that are equally distributed across all the schools. At the end of the year, they determine and then true up what they're calling the encroachment amount. And that is the encroachment, the overage.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Who is it?
I'm sorry. I've got dinner going on in the kitchen, dance, ballet in the dining room, and the dogs are hiding in here with me. So again, if you hear growling
and also Luke cannot play chess anymore because that's over.
Poor Luke. Yeah, he's the only one not out here doing something visually or distance on Zoom. Maggie's dancing on Zoom right now. So
I love it. I love it.
That's the piano music in the background. I don't know if you can hear that.
I can see, though, Luke has been quite the chess aficionado, you know? I think he was in all sessions yesterday.
He loves chess, and I'm so glad that is back because it's kind of created a competition here at home. Maggie is trying to convince me I need to help her so that she can get better. Yeah. I don't play chess, so dad is the lucky one because she's competitive. They're very competitive children, and
tell her to go to Aces. Tell her to go to a chess class.
I actually have a parent who wanted to come and speak to the board. She lost track of time, And she is asking if she can still, even though public comment session is over, she wants to know if she can still come and speak.
Is she there?
Well, I haven't, she didn't go on the website. She wants me to send her the link, and I don't want to do so until I'm able to tell her yes, she will be able to speak, or no, she won't.
I have no clue. I'll leave it to the board.
I don't have a problem with it, but I'll defer to those of you who have more experience with the public on these issues.
Doreen, are we legally allowed to reopen public comment? You're muted.
I know. I was trying to get to my button. sorry. I don't believe school districts usually do that after public comment is done. I
know they don't, you know.
I know they public don't. Comment
is, and then what we do, are we setting precedent then? And then are we opening up a can of worms, you know, with regard to anybody can come at any time. But, you know, when you allocate a specific time, that's the time that's allocated, but then I would just counsel her to come next time and okay. You know, and speak then. That would be my.
I want to make sure we're responsive, but I want to also be considerate to the agenda and to also precedent setting.
Okay.
Might I offer a suggestion? I think anytime there's a parent that has something to say, I think we provide them a vehicle for saying it. This is not the right vehicle. I agree 100% that, as Bill is saying, you set precedents and you really want to not do that. But Shannon, maybe what we could ask her to do is either summarize her comments, because a month is a long time, okay?
Yeah.
And it would seem like you're not caring about what I got to say, but maybe she could put her communication in a very summary fashion and submit a copy to you, and maybe submit a copy to Doreen. Okay. And if it's something that basically can be responded to, and maybe it doesn't have to come to the board, but it can still come back to us next month, but we would let her know that we really are concerned about what she has she would like to offer in terms of input.
I can already tell you, I can't, Doreen, I apologize. I can't remember if you and I spoke about it or not, but she is, she wants to ask the board to apply for a state waiver to be able to open the school.
I think
she should show up for public comment. If it's of the tenor of that nature, then you damn well better be here when public comments are, because that's what they're there for. All right. Bottom line, be here next month.
So what I can do is I can put her concerns, what she's already shared with me, into an email, and I can send it to both Doreen and possibly the board. And whoever would be appropriate can respond before.
Well, send it to Doreen. Don't send the don't create the wrong protocol coming back to the board. Okay, that's another backdoor way to do what you would want to do.
Got it.
just have.
But I also think then if she's serious about this, that you have to put her on, like, you know, when you sign up for public comment, that she's first on the list next month for public comment.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you want to, you definitely want to tell her that. But again, like I said, just make sure she's got an avenue to express it. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. And definitely send it to me.
I don't want to violate Brown Act.
Exactly, because then it appears that the board has taken action on a thing that wasn't posted. Yep.
Right. And Shannon, don't send it to me either.
No, CC Bill. He's going to be the mouth.
No.
He's going to write a thesis in response to her concern.
No.
Okay.
I've got my own concerns.
But Shannon,
I know.
Shannon, do emphasize that she'll be first on the public comment, and she really needs to use that vehicle appropriately. Okay? So just emphasize that if you would.
Yes. Thank you for allowing me to interrupt.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. I think where we were was on the MOU, correct?
Correct.
Any comments or discussion? Okay. Hearing none, I will move to approve the Ballington-San Bernardino Special Education MOU.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, roll call.
Christy?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Okay, item 6 has Doreen's name next to it.
Okay, so board members, I have included in your packet the very infamous learning continuity plan. So, this will
not serve to be confused
with the LCAP plan, the local control action plan, which we had finished and then had to start a whole new plan. I'm not going to go there.
That's it. We are not resentful over FB 98 or SB 820.
Yeah, not at all.
Not at all.
I love the extra administrative work.
So with this, we had to, and this was one of the reason why, again, thank you for your willingness to delay last week's meeting to this week. Part of the requirements of this plan in response to our current environment is they taken off the requirement to do an LCAP, which we would have normally approved at our budget time and we would have went forward. They said no, because of everything going on in the environment, we're gonna kind of give all the schools a break. And not shortly after that, they said,
We were done with it, okay?
But we have now a new requirement, and it's called the Learning Continuity Plan. The state requires us to, albeit they don't require us to use their template, we have to be responsive to every single thing in their template. So the majority of the schools are just using their template. Their template was ultimately finalized about a week ago. They had continually made changes to it, and it is due September 30th to our local authorizer as well as to the county. They require us to hold a public hearing. So this is the official public hearing on our learning continuity plan. And then they require another meeting, which is why we're meeting next Tuesday, the 29th, to approve it. I think if you had an opportunity to review it, I want to say that it really replicates basically what we talked about last month. It replicates our remote learning plan. It talks about all of the different things that we have put in place. It talks about our model. It talks about a potential hybrid model, should we be allowed to open school. If we are allowed to open school, we will go based on our authorizer's guidance, as well as at this point, the California Department of Public Health has issued specific group size limits. So we will work with what those are when we open. At present, there are 16 per group, which includes student and adults. We don't know, that could change given the factors of when we can open. It also identifies, again, the curriculum that we're going to use, and it identifies how we were able to ensure all of our families have access to distance learning. I really feel that through our discussion last month and our remote learning plan, this is probably a summary of that document that was presented to you, just in the CDE format. Shannon, Bill, do you want to add anything? I want to say thank you. I know it was a grueling process, so thank you for this process.
But you know, when you read it, I think it's a good job, you know. I mean, I think it really communicates all that we've been doing and, you know, and the work that both, you know, or you and Shannon and I have put into the summer to put together this program. And you know, I mean, so I read it and I think, wow, we've been busy. So
I agree. I think that it pretty clearly articulates how we responded to, you know, society's current situation and made sure that we met the needs of our kids. I can say that I think that we were able to articulate it well because we spoke of it and wrote it after we had already put in the work, you know, after we had come up with the plan and after we had started deployment of the materials and things like that. So that probably helped push along the document itself because the state did everything backwards.
Yes. And it was like building something on sand all the time that was constantly changing, you know?
Yep.
But I was appreciative of the way that we were able to stay the course and get together the three of us to work on a plan and to really hash it out, you know? I mean, I get a kick out of it because I think our teachers came in and, you know, they got their own stresses and jumped to do what they're doing, which they're doing wonderfully. They really did. I mean, and you know, I can't speak highly enough of the work that they're doing right now to implement this plan, but I think I get a kick because I think they thought we were just hanging out in the summer, you know? So we will be reviewing this in a meeting, I assure you.
And along with the plan, they are very prescript in how they want us to take, you know, participation. They've provided us with the template. Again, they said we don't have to use their template. We just have to make sure that we capture everything in their template for the weekly engagement and participation tracking. So we are going to use the CDE template. We feel that way an auditor won't question us and, you know, CDE won't question us and it's all there. So why take a risk of creating our own?
That's been the topic of more than a few teacher conversations as well.
Oh, yes. Yes, it has.
Yes, they require the teachers to really look at the activities and certify that they equate to a certain number of minutes, and they require a lot of detail and description in what the students are actually doing. So I think that has been just a little bit challenging for teachers also.
And daily tracking of each individual student, their level of participation.
It's a heck of a lot more paperwork for them, you know, and they're not used to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're all freaking out. In fact, you know, I have a meeting this week with them to go over that again for the third time.
And something that I've always shared with teachers is part of my job, a big part of my job, is to shield them from all of the bureaucratic things to enable them to just teach. Yeah. You know, that's where their focus should be, at just teaching. And I wasn't able to do that with this. They have to track that student engagement, and it does have a big impact on their time and their stress level, trying to balance everything.
And that's the thing. It's that added stress that, you know, we can't take away from them right now. But I think we try to make it simpler on them. So I hope, you know, but I agree with you, Shannon. Really do.
You know, I hate to say it, but I mean, I really want to say thank you to you guys, the three of you, for the work you do. You know, sometimes idle time is really the devil's workshop, as they say, and folks that are not doing the direct service work wind up creating processes, basically, that have intended consequences for those that do the direct work. So I really do think that window of time brought about all of these iterative changes that wound up being made. And again, thank you guys for doing a yeoman's job on it. And the product that basically you've come up with is just really, really an exemplary product. So thank you guys very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gerald. Much appreciated.
How do you keep track of what needs to be updated? Is there some place you're going that shows you what needs to be updated? I mean,
we call it lists and piles and sticky notes and.
We're on, Carla. We're actually on several distribution lists.
Yeah.
Yeah. From different departments within the CDE, with our consultant, with our back office company. So they provide updates and reminders and webinars and things like that. But
and then what I do is I crank out the emails and I tape them on my walls. So if you go into my office, you'll see all these papers on the wall. Well, those are action steps so that I can know I got to pay attention to this. And then I'll take it down when we're done with it and tear it up and throw it away. And all those sticky notes you see on my desk, they're all things that got to get done. So
and I do something similar. I just keep them all in my email inbox. If they're in my inbox, they're still to do. And it's a big email box these days.
I can share with you on any given day, there's probably a webinar going on that you should be on
right. That's
conflicting with another webinar that you should be on. That's how many they've pushed out during the last summer.
But I do want to, you know, kind of officially on the record state how incredibly impressed I am with the classroom teachers.
Yeah.
As Bill and I were mentioning, it is a tremendous increase in workload and stress and a very different management style. And every single one of them has responded with nothing but grace and strength and commitment. And we have had other people in the building comment on the level of dedication that it took for them to get through this. And I would go to the mat with anyone who said that this is an easy walk for them.
No. And then.
So like I said, I wanted it on the record of how incredibly hard they're working and how successful they're.
And then also to see the development from the week one, when we were talking people off the ledge and I was having teachers cry in my office and all of these things were going on. Like I had one teacher crying and I walked into a room today and she's just having a great time teaching, you know, and you know, it's like, how you doing? Great. It's like, she's got it down, you know, so they've been adapting and it's been, I think we have a good plan and they're, you know, they're on it. So, you know, I agree with Shannon. I can't thank them enough for all the work they're doing. You know,
absolutely. And just all, even the stuff that you don't anticipate, just the Chromebooks and the technology and all of that, just
right. And then I got to give kudos to my front office staff too, because they're handling all the calls, they're talking parents off the ledge, they're getting them online, and they're coming in to, like, we've been testing map testing this week, and parents come in with when they can't get on, and Dora and Miss Cassandra will be getting them online and, you know, just helping them as well as the returned Chromebooks and disseminating, you know, a replacement one. I mean, they've been on it too. So, you know, it really is a good team effort, you know, so.
Yeah.
Well, kudos. Thank you guys. You're doing a great job.
Yeah.
So do we move on that plan then? It's a good one.
Oh, we can't vote today.
We can't vote on it yet.
We can't move on it. Oh,
this is the public hearing.
Oh, okay. Well,
one can see that you're ready to get rid of.
I'm ready.
Okay, we can go on to the next item, the deferral and the impact.
So, board members, I've been talking about the deferral, and I kind of alluded to it earlier and when we were doing the financials. I prepared for you a document in your packet, and then I also prepared for you a spreadsheet of how it would directly impact both schools. So overall, I mentioned that schools are historically paid on the schedule. They call it the 559 schedule. So with the idea that you have very little expenses in the first 2 months, and then as school starts going, you get more expenses. So all of the funding is distributed based on a 559 schedule, where you get 5% of July and August, and then through September through June, you get your remaining 9% to get you at 100%. as with the latest budget approval, and to help mitigate the budget shortfall, they're implementing deferrals. And essentially this means that schools will only receive 64% of their funding, and will receive the additional about 36% the following year, which of course creates a significant cash flow situation. So the chart, this chart shows you pretty much just the percentages of when the deferrals actually begin, February, March, April, May, and June. And it shows you the percentages that will be paid for versus our what we would have originally got at 9%. Just of note, the June deferral has actually been written into law now. So in order for it to be taken off the board going forward, actually the law now has to be amended. Otherwise, that's going to be a standard going into the next fiscal years. So what's on your screen now is actually how these deferrals relate specifically to our two schools. So in San Bernardino, with the deferrals starting in February, and what I will share is this is deferrals based on LCFF. And this is LCFF is comprised of, and I'm going to be extremely simplistic, primary three funding sources. It's the LCFF, which is our state aid. And then there's our in-lieu property tax. And then there's the education protection account that was voted into by the taxpayers years ago. The deferrals impact only the state aid portion at this point. Now, they're telling us that the state could change their mind at any time, and they could also change the percentages. They're also saying that the special education state funding portion is also up for deferrals as well. This just represents the LCFF state aid portion. So for San Bernardino, you can see what we are supposed to be paid for our state aid. You can see the impact of what will be paid with our deferral and ultimately the budget cash fall beginning February through June will be about $608,000. And then if we go down for El Centro, you'll see the same thing. El Centro from February to June. If we were receiving a regular year, what we would receive would be about 2.4 for state aid. Under our new system with deferrals, we'll receive 1.4. Ultimately, El Centro's cash this year will result in about $986,000. So that demonstrates the significant cash flow that we're beginning to have to really plan for. So even if our funding is held harmless, and we, you know, from an income statement perspective, we'll still get our funding. So we're managing that on the side of cash flow. We're still going to have to come up with some critical solutions to address that. At this point, we're going to meet internally to really think about some of our approaches on how to address these cash flows with our CFO. In your board packet, I gave you some possible financing options, and we'll be talking through some of those. There is an option to request an exemption from those deferrals from the California Department of Education. In order to get this exemption, you have to demonstrate insolvency, basically. So in other words, if you don't get the exemption from these cash deferrals, your school cannot exist. And that's a pretty tough, and they're holding you to that demonstration pretty closely. It is on a first come first serve basis. There's pros and cons with that. You have to have certification from your authorizer and from the county. They have to say that, yes, in fact, if you do not get these deferrals, you will be insolvent. We have, of course, El Centro coming up. We're beginning the process of our charter renewal there. So just thinking about if we want to go to Mr. Ledoux right now and ask him to sign off on a deferral exemption for us. These are just, you know, all issues that we want to take into consideration. Historically, the school solvency has been a very big speaking point for Mr. Ledoux in prior renewals. So just something to consider with that. Other options, you know, there's always, you can negotiate with your creditors to delay payments. There's also, you know, bank loans and credit lines and private lenders out there. These are all subject to varying interest rates. Sometimes they're very costly. There's factoring out there where you actually, you know, sell your future receivables. I'm not sure if you recall back when the state implemented deferrals, I think it was in 2008 when we kind of went through this 2009 again with El Centro. A lot of schools use this option, and it also caused a lot of schools to never recover from when those that did factoring. So that's kind of something that we need to really consider. There's also an option with the California School Finance Authority. And again, this is a state agency, but what they have done is they have got together with certain creditors to put together some funding for charter schools. They're calling it the ASAP program, or Advances on State Aid Payments. And they're sharing, you know, that it is a first come first serve basis. It's relatively inexpensive, but they're sharing that it could be used as a bridge to get quick funding with a very low interest rate, and then they act somewhat as the broker in the process. So those are all kind of some of the initial strategies we're looking at. Again, we're going to plan to meet and come up with a very defined plan on how to address or how to respond to the significant cash shortages that we know that we'll experience. And based on the law, if the law is not amended, hopefully it will not go for February, March, April, May, but at some point it will always have to anticipate June unless there's an amendment to the legislation. Any questions on that?
Well, that doesn't look very well. Good, very good.
Yeah.
One of the elements I think that is really important is for us to be clear, if we are able to get clarity, on whether or not the local school districts are requesting exemptions in terms of their position on us, and their perspective on us can be at one standard. But we also need to know what they're doing and whether they're requesting exemptions. Because, I mean, we're talking about a lot more cash, you know, and we're talking about a lot more salaries, a lot more STIRS. I mean, there's a lot tied into that. And so I want us to make the decision out of really an understanding of the pros and cons of what kind of position we put ourselves in. That is important for us. But also, the argument can't be one-sided. that basically solvency, if solvency is a requisite for requesting it, okay, the district can't request it and perceive itself as different than a charter school requesting it. So if we can just find out, you know, whether districts are doing this, that would, I think, be very helpful.
I think that's a good point.
So Doreen, does this mean we're only gonna get 64% of the funding and not gonna get the rest of it? Is that basically what it is?
On a cash basis, yes.
It's cash flow, Carla.
Will we ever get that money back, Doreen?
Yes, you get it the following year.
Yeah, this goes in the next fiscal year. So that is the implication of that. It impacts you starting in February, and your repayment plan does not true up until you are significantly in to the next school year. And then if, in fact, they start this process over again, you're actually floating the state, you know, in terms of your shortfall. So if they true it up in, like, August, okay, then that would be one thing. But that's not necessarily the game plan that they would true up in August. So you're floating this, and you're in a perpetual shortage in terms of cash. So we've really got to think about the implications of this pretty seriously.
Yeah.
We've done this shortage problem with line of credit. Is that something we can do?
Carla, this is a pretty significant, I mean, the line of credit on the schools, basically, it will be factored, okay? The line of credit on the schools are right now, this would mean $1.5 million.
Ooh, that's a lot.
This is new on top of the line of credit that we already have, which is right at about $800,000. So now you're talking about a need for a line of credit being in the area of really, you know, $2.3 million. It's pretty significant. So that's why we've really got to think this through. Mm-hmm. You know? And factoring, I mean, I think Doreen hit it right on the head. Factoring is not a strategy that you want to use. You're losing on two fronts. Not only are you getting the money that you have tremendously discounted by the factoring, you can't even request the some sort of offset with the state on that once you get it back. That's lost money, period, paragraph, and end. So not only have cash flow, but you also have the fact that you've actually lost money. That's why so many schools have difficulty regaining their footing after they've entered into these factoring relationships.
Well, I've put together a band of highwaymen, and we're starting to hit the banks.
A group of Robin Hoods.
Yeah, we started with the liquor stores, but that was only a penny anything. So then we thought we better go for grand larceny, you know. So we're on it.
I think what needs to occur is that realistically, we'll be attending a webinar tomorrow afternoon. All of our internal senior management staff, both with Community Education Development Corporation and Southwest, because realistically, at the end of the day, we're in this together, you know. And so we really need to bring all of our best thinking together and really listen and understand the options that are available. And then when we look at prioritizing options, we will, and it may request us even if I think we're planning to have a meeting next week, okay, on the 29th. I think that if we're prepared, we need to come back and share with the group what it is that appear to be our number one, number two, and number three priorities in terms of how we're going to approach this issue. Because this board needs to be involved in that discussion process as well.
There's going to be a lot of schools. They
oh yeah.
They can't survive.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it echoes of 2008, 2009. I think those deferrals went on for what, 3 years, 4 years? That was, it's hard.
They have a payment repayment plan, and most of them are, you're not going to get this year's full amount until like November of next year. So it goes even farther past July. It's taking you into a good portion of next year.
So, I mean, I think, I think step one is to, for us to be smart about what our, and I say this in terms of competitors, but these are competitors for this money, this exemption. So just really understanding what districts are doing, and not just El Centro, but we got several school districts in the Valley and in the Inland Empire, but try to get an understanding of that, because then that will help us with our at least our thinking around our plan of attack.
Any additional questions, board members?
No, I think we will wait until you had your webinar and get some good input from other schools and participants and see maybe what's the best line of defense is.
Agreed.
And just the last topic I had on here was reopening and COVID response plan. I think we talked a lot about it in your packet. I did outline some additional details around our hybrid model approach. And again, based on, you know, the state of California and our authorizer, that would be the determinant on if we can even begin to think about opening into a hybrid model. And that would be where we would do some on-site learning in accordance with how many students we could have in each classroom, which at this point, if these were the regulations going into if we opened, it would be 16 in each including the teacher, so about 15 children. And we could even look at even a smaller size than that. Again, California Department of Public Health shared 16 was on the outer limits of group size, and always smaller is better. We are following California's blueprint for a safer economy, and at this point they have that four-tiered system. Each of our counties, San Bernardino as well as in Imperial, is in the widespread or the purple category, which will not allow for on-site construction. I believe they have to be in the red, which allows them to be considered for on-site instruction. I did provide you with some things that we have taken into consideration should we be able to be open at some point for on-site instruction. We have put in place protocols for screening, symptom screening, temperature checking for both children and staff. We're changing our sort of setups for specials to allow for reduced, you know, contact. We're thinking that specials will actually come into the classroom versus children, you know, going from classroom to classroom. We've also made modifications to our pickup and drop-off procedures. We've made modifications to our meal process. Everything will become individually wrapped and individualized for each student. We've also we've eliminated the salad bar completely. We've also added additional, you know, cleaning and sanitization should we be able to open up. We do anticipate, you know, bringing on additional custodial staff to help clean, as well as then having those deep cleaning experiences in the evening. We know we're that Zoom is going to continue to be a big part of our life, for Zoom or a like platform. I think it's Google Hangouts or Google Meets and then Google World, to allow for, you know, the meeting and to eliminate as group sizes as much as we possibly can. The other piece of your document is really, I just tried to walk through the steps should a positive case occur. And this again is all in accordance with the issuance of what the public health department in the state of California has provided us as regulations. They did say if there was a positive case in a classroom, then that one class would close, and then remote learning would occur. And they're very detailed about what needs to happen before that classroom can reopen again. And this is, again, a window of 14 days, public health consultation, cleaning and disinfection. They shared that to trigger an actual school closure, the school then would close if 5% of a total number of staff and students would test positive for COVID, and that would issuance a school closure. So this was based directly on the guidance of the California Department of Health, as well as CDC regulations. We're just modeling it based on those agencies as our guidance. At this point, we're prepared to continue remote learning. When we initially started discussing it, we thought until January at a minimum. Again, we're just really trying to respond to sort of the environment around us, which it seems to be constantly changing. Any questions on that?
Well, let's say that that the students are able to participate in class education, and you're doing a hybrid. How are you going to do that?
Very carefully.
Yeah, we would basically continue with the digital instruction that's going on right now, but there will also be then a physical presence, and we will divide the class into an A group and a B group.
Yep.
And that'll be half in the A will be online and half will be in the school on a Monday. And then the next day we'll switch where the B group is in the building and the A group is online. We'll keep flip-flopping like that, so each group of children has an opportunity to have real-time connection with the school, with their peers, with instruction, et cetera, and then the instruction, the digital instruction, will go on as they're doing right now, you know, until we're able to then, you know, move to the next step, which would be open and up full. Although I was in a meeting with the health department 2 days ago, you know, it seems to be a little bit more of a pressure to open up the valley. And the woman that was from the health department said something to the effect of, you know, well, there are these two indicators that need to change. And if they do, then you can open up. And I was like
fully? Oh.
Well, this is the thing I asked her. I said, like fully? I said, or in a hybrid. And she said, oh no, you could open up fully. You know, with precautions. And I was like, you know, and then I said to her, well, you know darn well that whatever the Valley does, you know, we'll all have to do it, you know, because if all of a sudden El Centro opens up fully and we do a hybrid, we're going to lose 50% of our population, you know, so let's be real about that. But I can't see that happening. Plus, we also have to take into account the fact, because when we did our survey, at least 20% of our population said that they did not feel comfortable sending their children to school. I mean, maybe that's been trimmed down to 10% right now, right? But you will still have about 10% of our population that will say, I don't want my kid coming into the building. And we will have to accommodate that even if we do open up fully. You know, so we have to be flexible and willing to provide both digital and in-school education, and we're ready to do it.
But flexibility and creativity are what we do best.
That's right.
And I think the key too is group size. I mean, at this point, you know, the California Department of Public Health is very clear on the number of group, you know, numbers of people you can have in a group. So I think that's something that we need to be very cautious and conscientious of as we go forward as well.
Well, I guess Ballantyne Academy is lucky that we have small class sizes as it is anyway. So if just a few 10-15% of parents are keeping their kids at home, then I guess we can do it with 16 students plus the teacher, or 15 students plus the teacher in the classroom.
Right.
Just one question about the, the principals and the teachers and Doreen, you know, everybody involved in the instruction is doing an amazing job and being flexible. How does that flexibility translate into support staff in the opening, in the physical presence of the school? So are those... Are the receptionists, are they part-time? Do you have other part-time staff or other staff that we kind of need to ask them to be flexible too, or are they already flexible?
They are flexible. If we were to open, we would have to look at certain positions, bringing back certain positions that in a remote type of environment we don't need. For example, all of our nutritional aides. We've reduced some of our schedules of our support staff. So instructional aides, and as a remote learning environment, we do not need as much of that staffing. So that's really where we would need to look at our staffing design to help support the on-site design.
It sounds like you don't foresee that being a big challenge.
Well, we've already communicated with our staff. So my nutritional staff, they're on quote-unquote hiatus. They come in one day a week, and they're ready to come back. They've already committed to coming back full time or whatever we need when we open. You know,
I see.
My front office staff, the administrative assistant is on a half day, but she would be full day. What we would be looking at, and we're working on that right now, is the additional custodial staff that we will need. You know, so we will need to then, also have people in place who can come in to step up like that, because one custodian is not going to be able to fulfill the state cleaning requirements that's necessary to,
right,
to do what needs to be done. So we're already preparing for that. That's an additional cost to the school as well. But from where most of my aides and people who are not with us now have committed to come back.
I mean, there's not a lot of jobs out there too,
right?
For folks to migrate to. So they really are interested in many ways in trying to get back to what would represent as a reliable source of income for them. Like I said, we're probably going to be wrestling with this for quite a while.
My site has committed, just about everybody that lost their position has committed to coming back.
Can't quite hear you. Can't hear you, Shannon.
Oh, I'm not muted.
We hear you, but it's
your
faint.
Volume up.
Don't worry, it's not that important. Carrie,
are you leaning back, you think?
Huh?
Are you leaning back? Sometimes I know when I lean back, I go away from the volume.
No.
No?
No.
Weird.
I think what you wanted to share is that at the beginning, we did have a long discussion with many of the staff that during the remote that the position was not in support of or not needed in our remote design. And given that, should we move back into an instructional on-site model, that we would reach back out to them.
Right. So they haven't been let go. They've been put on ice.
No, thank you for answering my questions.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Nope.
Okay.
All right, well, item seven, does anyone have any closing comments?
I do. I think we saw from really how we had to administer approvals that we are short board members and are in need of the identification of at least two new board members. And so I really would like to, I know we're challenged by you know, not being able to have a lot of face time presence with individuals, but I would really encourage board members to reach out to via Zoom or via telephonic individuals and explore with them the possibility of gaining you know, access to understanding what we do as board members, what our schools are doing and achieving, and really inviting them to join us. Because we really do need to fill that void of a shortage of board members. Legal is fine. Finance is fine. Administration is fine. I mean, I think even if, you know, if we got another parent on the board from each of the schools, I think that kind of works as well. But I think we do need to deal with this issue so that we don't get in a position where we cannot transact business. That really is important. So I just put that out there. And hopefully we can actually have some activity that we can maybe report on at our next board meeting about outreach activities that each of us have done.
Okay. Any other comments or discussion around that or anything else? Okay. Date and time and locate, well, we know the location, of course. Date and time of our meeting?
8 a.m. All right.
September 29th, 8 a.m.?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep, in my calendar. I got it.
And that's an approval of the learning plan.
Right.
Okay. Well, it's wonderful seeing all your lovely faces. And whether business
Thank you.
I'll say meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christy.
Thank you. We're going to get through this, guys. We are going to get through this.
We have to.
Yep. Okay. We're almost there.
All right, guys, we'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.